Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
All right, you're very welcome along to Thursday's football show. Nathan with you for the next hour. We're heading into another busy weekend in the Premier League, and live and exclusive commentaries coming your way once again this Sunday, starting with West Brom against Manchester United from 2 o'clock. Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr will bring you through that one, and then myself and Stephen MacPhail will talk you through Arsenal against Leeds from 4:30. As always, John will be here on Saturday, taking you through all the 3 o'clock kickoffs as well. But right now, I'm delighted to be joined by Republic of Ireland and Swansea City midfielder Conor Hourihan. Good evening, Conor.
How are we doing? You okay?
I'm all right. How are you keeping?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Not too bad.
Good. I feel like I'm doing you a bit of a disservice just describing you as Ireland and Swansea midfielder at the moment. It's marauding number 10, free scoring Conor Hourihan.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, listen, it started off okay, but...
Three goals in three games, it started better than okay.
Yeah, listen, quietly happy with it, but, you know, never me being me, never satisfied, always wanting more, so looking to get more, hopefully, in the coming weeks and months.
This is this false Cork modesty that's coming through once again.
No, pure modesty here, I'm afraid. You won't catch me out on that one.
I was watching the game against Norwich, I think it was the last Friday night, and yeah. It does seem as though you've been given... almost a free role? Is it a number 10 role? What position are you playing in the team?
Yeah, we're playing with a six and two eights, really, in our formation that we're playing with here. And I'm just one of the eights and probably the more attack-minded eight out of the two who are probably playing there at the minute, given that role from the manager to get forward. You know, over the course of my career, always be able to, you know, score a few goals and get a few assists, and he wants me to kind of influence the game higher up the pitch, so... That's music to my ears, really, and always been one of my strengths, so enjoying it so far.
Because you have played a deeper role at times as well, and you've played that number 8 role with Aston Villa. Where are you happiest?
Definitely as a number 8, attacking number 8. Listen, it's always been a strength of mine, higher up the pitch. The goal against Norwich, actually, I got told was my 80th goal of my career. So,
right.
It's a decent number for a centre midfielder. I've always managed to get goals over the course of my career, so... I definitely feel like, you know, in the attacking third, like I said, getting in and around the edge of the box, in around the penalty area, is somewhere that I've always been a strong point in my career.
Is it just the freedom that you like, that there's not as much pressure on you defensively, that as a six, if you step forward, you've got to make sure you're always back in time to cover? Is it just that option of making those runs forward that you enjoy?
I just think over the course of my Villa time the majority of my Villa time, I know I played six for a little bit, and under this manager, he feels like my strengths are higher up the pitch, and I agree with that. You know, like you said, influencing the game, like you keep saying, higher up the pitch. Over the course of my career, I've always tried to, you know, get goals and assists into my games to try, and that makes me stand out above others. I feel other lads are physically stronger than me, or break the play up better than me, or whatever it may be. Every player's got their own strengths, and I've always feel like, you know, goals and assists over a course of a season, I always put in decent numbers. So, higher up the pitch is where I like to operate.
Who are the guys you look at then that are playing in that role, say in the Premier League at the moment, that you might, I don't want to say model your game on, but you would look at and think, yeah, actually, they've got this sus. Like, is Gundogan a traditional number 8? I don't know if anybody in Manchester City is traditional in what they do right now.
Yeah, he would be a very attack-minded number 8. Of course, at the minute he's free-flowing and scoring a lot of goals. I managed to kind of look at him up close the other night, being on the benches, you know, and I knew he was in form. I know he didn't score against us the other night, but, you know, his runs into the box and how he kind of conducts his game higher up the pitch. So that was an interesting watch. Obviously, Kevin De Bruyne as well, you know, higher up the pitch. A teammate I know of mine, obviously Jack, I know his unbelievable ability, you know, dribbling past players. And I know he's playing out wide at the minute, but just the numbers that he puts in, goals and assists, you know, and like I said, every player's got their own strengths, but like I said, over the course of a season, I always manage to get put in good numbers, and that kind of stands me out from others, really.
There's so much football on at the moment, and here you know better than anybody, you're probably playing every 3-4 days at the moment, but do you take time out to sit down and watch other teams playing and watch other players in your position and see what they're doing? Are you still always trying to learn?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Yes, and I'm obsessed with the game. I love the game. Every game that's on telly I watch, or I try and watch it at least, you know. I'm doing my coaching badges at the minute with the FAI, so I'm trying to look at the game a little bit differently, probably from a manager's point of view or from a tactical point of view, the older I get. But yeah, listen, I love watching football, love playing football, and like I said, I'm obsessed with the game, so, you know, hence why I've probably come to Swansea and just want to continue playing and learning about the game.
What is it with a player like Jack Grealish then, who you would have seen up close and personal for years at this stage, that has him at that very highest level right now? What is it about his game that separates him from others? Is it because often the thing that comes up is just the speed, that they can do everything that little bit quicker? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, he makes the game look so easy. First and foremost, he's got the natural ability that he's got, the way he handles the ball, the way he handles the ball under pressure with players around him. He plays the game like he's out in the schoolyard or playing down the park with his friends. The way he drives with the ball and commits players to open up space for others, and he's dribbling past and committing players at the top level and making them look ordinary, really. So it's just been a joy to play with him and to call him a friend over the 4 years I've been at Villa, to see how he's developed into the player he is today. It's just been a joy to be around him and to play with him, really.
The one criticism, it's not even a criticism of him at times, is that he gets fouled too much. Mm-hmm. Is that he goes to ground too much. Is that something he can work on, or is that actually just the way the game is, that teams set out, they know if they're going up against Aston Villa, if you stop Grealish, you're going a long way to stopping them, and that he comes in for a little bit more rough treatment than other players might?
There's probably a balance to it. I think probably pinpoint it, a lot of managers, you know, in press conferences and all the rest of it, speak about Jack openly and how good he is. So if they stop him, they find that it's a good chance to take points off the team, because he's such a vocal point for the team and for the club. Another thing, me knowing Jack, I suppose, without giving too much away, is that if he yellow cards his opponent, he's got you. I know that's a little secret of his. You know, early fouls, I know defenders and people who are marking him like to kind of let, you know, the old school way, let him know early that you're in for a game. But he loves that. He thrives off that. And you know, he plays the game a lot as well, to know, like, if this player up against me gets a yellow card, or if the referee's onto him, to be careful, he's got you exactly where he wants you. So I think there's a fine balance of him, Jack, being a very smart player, and the opposition kind of letting him know he's in for a game as well.
Since you've learned your lesson when it comes to talking about Jack Grealish, that he's headline news, so anything about Jack Grealish is going to make waves. So if I ask you, could he play at a top six club, should he go during the summer, what are you going to say?
No comment. Nah, listen, Jack, like you said, Jack's an unbelievable player with top talent, and, you know, he's a good friend of mine, you know, which is, like I said, I've been very fortunate to play with a player of his ability. But let's just say he's one of the best in the league at the minute, and his natural ability and the way he's performing at the minute is at a top level.
It's going to be a bit of a sickener during the summer watching England at Euro 2020 with Declan Rice and Jack Grealish possibly in the middle of midfield.
Yeah, listen, I know, but listen, that's life sometimes, that's football. It happens, and more luck to the both of them, you know. They're both playing at a top level at the minute, so, you know, fair play to them.
How do you feel talking about Villa? Because you are still technically an Aston Villa player, you're on loan at Swansea. Do you see yourself going back to Villa at the end of the season? Have you thought that far ahead?
Yeah, I suppose it crosses your mind, of course. Listen, I'm going to have to go back first and foremost. I've got a year left of my deal, and we'll just see what happens. Listen, my thought process was going out, playing some football, and getting myself in the best position possible come the summer. I was desperate to go out and play. You know, I probably had lost that little bit of purpose of going into training, you know, because me being me and the mentality I have towards the game and the character I am, I'm one of the first in, last out every single day. I work my backside off to try and make the absolute utmost of my career. And when you go in every day and train to high standards and try and improve yourself every single day, and come a Saturday or come a Friday or a Monday or wherever, whenever the game is, and you're sitting on the bench, it's tough. It's not easy. So, you know, I wanted to do everything I could possibly do to get out and play. And we'll see come the summer. And like I said, hopefully it will be a successful one, and I'll reevaluate everything in the summer.
Not every player would think about it like that, though. A lot of players would think, I'm in the Premier League. You know, the route you've come through League Two, League One, Championship to Premier League. You're 30. A chance may come to play in some of the big games. A couple of injuries here and there. You're on a good wage. Why not just hang around? Was that part of your thought process at all? That, listen, I could just sit this out till the end of the season. There are no Euros, unfortunately, and see what happens.
Yeah, it would have been the easy option. It definitely would have. I wasn't really interested in the easy option, if I wanted you to, you know, truth be told. When growing up as a footballer, to, you know, to dream of playing in the Premier League or to dream of making a career for myself, my dream was never to get up, train Monday to Friday and be on the bench on a Saturday. I just don't see I can't connect with that. It's just not me. I've no interest in that. So yeah, I could have sat around. I just had a newborn baby with my partner, only 8 weeks old. So the decision to leave made it a little bit tougher as well. But it's the only thing I wanted to do is go out and play. You know, dropping down the league, I had no problem in doing that. I dropped down to League Two to make a career for myself. So that didn't faze me whatsoever. And I wanted to put my reputation on the line. Like, I wanted to show people what I'm all about. You know, don't forget about me. I'm not a squad player in the Premier League. I want to be a mainstay in a team trying to achieve something. And I'm excited for the months ahead.
Did you enjoy playing in the Premier League? I mean, the actual games when you're on the pitch. Is it as enjoyable as you had imagined it would have been when you were working your way up? Or is it just so bloody tough?
Yeah, of course I enjoyed it. I tried to enjoy it as much as I could, but, you know, the type of guy I am, being there, I wanted more, and I wanted to play more, and I wanted to achieve more. So it was hard to enjoy it. Probably something I'll enjoy a little bit more when I finish and I look back and say to myself, oh, I managed to play in the Premier League and, you know, score a couple of goals in the Premier League. And it's something I'll take huge pride in looking back on. But I enjoyed some games and I didn't enjoy other games, because, you know, I might have done well in some games, not so well in other games. We won some games, we lost some games. So it was a mixed bag, to be honest with you, you know. So huge pride in being able to say that I got to the Premier League. But something I'll probably look back on with a little bit more pride, like I said, when I'm finished, because I've got a goal now and a hunger to try and get back there.
Yeah, rightly so. And I think the last time I spoke to you was just before football restarted. And you got back in the Villa team. You were in the Villa team for the majority of games towards the end of last season. I think you played the final four, started the final four when Villa got the points to survive. You started the first couple of games of this season, were playing well, got yourself a goal. And then Ross Barkley arrives in and you're out of the side and you never really get back in again. And I know every player says they love the challenge of new arrivals and you need that for a team to keep progressing. When you're the one who misses out, do you realise very quickly, maybe my face doesn't fit the way it once did?
Yeah, possibly. And I suppose that's the reality I had to kind of face up to. And I don't hide away from honest conversations. I don't hide away from facing the facts. And I knew that, you know, I'm a 30-year-old, like, you know, just turned 30 in Feb. And I know the game, and I know when it's kind of your time maybe to move on and try and play somewhere else. And I think I came to that stage at Villa right now anyway. Who knows what will happen in the future. Club spent a lot of money on Ross and, you know, he was going to play for the near future. So I just thought it was the right time to go, right time to move on, get a fresh challenge, challenge myself to see what I'm all about and get a run of games. And just to give myself that little bit of belief moving forward that, you know, I'm still here and I'm still here to hang around and to make a difference. And like I said, it probably was the right time to move on, and the club probably recognised that, and, you know, they've probably seen it from a good opportunity for me to go play games, add value to myself from a business point of view for Aston Villa come the summer, and let's just see what happens.
How does it work out then when you decide and the agreement is there that Villa are going to let you go on loan? Does the agent just put out the feelers? Did you have a few different options before you settled on Swansea?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, listen, I suppose yeah, the agent goes to work then a little bit, and you've got your fingers crossed that there'll be a few takers first and foremost, because you put yourself out there to the club that you want to leave. And, you know, in a pandemic when money's a little bit scarce for some clubs, you hope that something comes up. And listen, lucky enough for myself, there was a couple of things on the table, and, you know, you go talking to a few people and a few phone calls get made, and I felt like it was the right fit here. The manager told me, you know, where he saw me fitting into the team. As we said on the start of the call, you know, further forward, that license to get forwards, conducting myself at the top of the pitch, and that kind of fitted the bill for me. And yeah, the club have been fantastic and the manager's been fantastic to make sure it's, you know, worked for me so far. And so far, so good. It's been a good fit.
Yeah, they're a club who've been a Premier League side, a very good Premier League side over the last decade as well. And you're not going to a Championship team who are mid-table, who are sort of cruising along. Like, they're right there in the mix for promotion right now. So you're going into a pretty pressurised scenario.
Yeah, and that was something that I wanted to do. I didn't, you know, I suppose motivation was a little bit of where I wanted to go. I didn't want to go to, you know, a middle of the road Championship club, you know, where later on in the season, maybe 3 points aren't as important to the club. I really wanted to go to somewhere that was looking to achieve something, looking to get promoted, and get involved in a group that were hungry to get back to the, you know, to the top level Premier League. So when Swansea came along, and, you know, we were second in the league at the time, we're third now, you know, 3 points on a Saturday or whatever night the games may fall are so important to us right now. And it's something that I'm excited for, excited by the challenge. And yeah, you know, bring on the next couple of months. I'm really excited by it. And let's see what happens, really.
You sound like a man who is at a stage where you probably realise that this isn't going to last forever, and that you want to make the most of whatever time you have as a footballer, because Swansea's a good trek from Birmingham. You mentioned you just have an 8-week-old child. And I know the last time we spoke, you know, there was a lot of COVID difficulties around that. Everybody had to get on board with this, that it's not the easiest decision to go to Swansea.
No, it wasn't an easy decision. But like you just touched on there, you know, your career doesn't last forever. Some lads, you get to a certain age or a certain time in their career where they might not be interested to go on loan. They're happy to sit around. But, you know, I've just turned 30. You know, I've got two children now, and I wanted to, you know, go out and get myself, like I said earlier on, in the best position possible come the summer, for them more than anything, you know. So I suppose there was a lot of reasons to take to try and get out and to try and play. Yeah, listen, like I said, I probably have 3-4 more years, I feel like, hopefully at a very good and top level. And I really wanted to make the most of it. You know, I'm hungry for more. I'm always hungry for more. It's just something that's ingrained in me. And I really wanted to make the most of, you know, the next 3-4 years of my career. And it started by getting out on loan in January. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to the time ahead now.
If Ireland had qualified for the Euros, there probably would have been far more Irish players moving in the January transfer window, desperate for game time to make sure they were in the squad. But there are still big, important games coming up next month at this stage, the start of the World Cup qualifiers. Was that a factor at all in your decision?
Yeah, 100% without doubt. You know, I feel like I've got my foot in the door now, you know, in the Ireland squad and at that level. And it's something that I didn't want to lose you know, loosen the grip on. Like you said, your career doesn't last forever, and playing for Ireland is such an amazing feeling, putting on that green jersey and going out and playing there for out at the Viva or wherever it may be, and playing for Ireland. So it's something that I wanted to keep hold of for the next few years without a doubt. It was in the back of my mind that if I didn't go out and play between January and the summer, come March, you know, I probably would have been in the squad, but would I have been one of the names on the team sheet? Probably not, maybe, because of my fitness. It wouldn't have been up to scratch. So that was another big factor why I wanted to go out and play, be match fit, hopefully be in good form come March, and hopefully be in amongst the squad and fighting for a place in the starting team.
It's hard to know where to start with the national squad, because so much has happened over the last 6 months on and off the pitch. On the pitch, the disappointment of the Slovakia game and not qualifying for the Euros, how did you deal with that?
Yeah, it was a huge disappointment. That's one goal that you know, I really want to achieve before I retire, is get to a major tournament with Ireland. You know, another chance for that starts in March. But, you know, getting so close, you know, and to be knocked out through a penalty shootout, I suppose. I know we had another game to go if we got through in that, but it wasn't easy, you know. I suppose I took a little bit of blame for myself. I'm my own worst critic, and I know I should have scored in the game. So that was a tough one to take, no doubt. It would have been great to get through, you know, to the final and then get onto the major tournament, but it wasn't to be. But I felt like that was a very good performance and positives to take from the team. From the night, we played well. And obviously after that, things obviously haven't gone to plan. So it's kind of hard to look back on that night and take positives from it now because, you know, there's been so much happened since then. But I suppose, yeah, it was hugely disappointing, like you said, but, you know, hungry for more and hungry to try and achieve more to try and get to in a major tournament really over the next few years.
A moment like that, that missed opportunity, because it is slowed right down and it's replayed again and again. Is it like that in your mind? Is it something that vividly you remember the moment and the chance and what could have happened, what you felt you should have done? Is it something that stays with you?
Yeah, listen, I look back and think about it. You know, I suppose, I wouldn't say every day, but a lot of time, you know, I see it come up on social media or, you know, when I meet up with the Ireland team again, it's probably more fresh because I'm in around the environment again or whatever. But I brush myself off and crack on. And listen, I'm sure happier days will come and hopefully sooner rather than later. You know, getting into them positions, we've probably struggled for goals. You know, scoring a few for Swansea will only bring confidence to try and do that the next time we meet up. So, yeah, it was disappointing, but I see myself as a strong, you know, character and mentally, you know, really, you know, strong from that point of view. So I brush myself off and crack on.
Is international disappointment a totally different feeling to club disappointment when, as you say, it's probably different now in COVID times because you're not seeing your family as much, you're not seeing your mates as much, but it means so much to them as well for Ireland and for you to be successful?
Yeah, so yeah, it there's a different feel to it, of course, because you're connected to, you know, Ireland and family and friends obviously a lot more than maybe club. And maybe a homegrown player, say like a Jack, or maybe a homegrown player from Swansea. Listen, you buy into it, of course, and you're really attached to it emotionally, and your family are as well, of course. But obviously, being born and bred Ireland and born and bred Cork man, there's that much more love towards it, I suppose. And it wasn't an easy time. It wasn't, you know, it's been a tough few months to play for Ireland. There's no getting away from that. But hopefully now, come March, you know, there'll be a somewhat fully fit squad and we won't have as much bad luck as previous, you know, trips with COVID and whatever. And hopefully we can move forward and start a new campaign in a good way come March.
You must have been the only one who didn't have any COVID issues.
Yeah, I've been fortunate, I suppose. I had it back in April,
right,
at the very start. So, you know, when everything kind of stopped, football stopped and all the rest of it. So, I kind of had my time back in April with it, and we've had tests since, and I've, you know, supposed need to come back. I've got the strong antibodies or whatever. So, I've been one of the fortunate ones, I suppose, that I haven't missed football from it, and hopefully, touch wood, that's the case moving forward.
Yeah, and have you had any long-term effects at all from it?
No, I've been fine. It was literally back in April when it first started to come out, I suppose, and I was getting a lot of headlines, obviously, because football was stopping, and I just had no taste or smell at the time. But, you know, luckily enough for me, I recovered fully, and I was okay.
Good stuff. You mentioned the Slovakia game and actually the performance. That was probably the best performance so far of the Stephen Kenny era, and maybe the only one that it's really fair to judge upon, because there were such mitigating factors where certain games there was well over a dozen of the first squad that were chosen ending up missing. But you can't get away from no wins, just one goal. When you go back in, it's going to be, what, two training sessions again maybe before you're flying to Belgrade to play Serbia. All the COVID protocols, it doesn't feel like the same sort of enjoyable camp that we would have heard of for years, where the players are buzzing to get in and you, again, get to meet up with family. How do you push those eight games to the back of your mind and somehow start afresh with a buzz and a confidence for such a tough game in Serbia to start off with?
Yeah, well, listen, first and foremost, we're going to have to. There's no getting away from that. If we want to be successful come March and moving forward in the World Cup campaign, we're going to have to brush it off and try and forget about it. It's not been an easy few trips, the last few trips. There's no getting away from that. Results, goals, like you said. You know, the Slovakia one's probably been one of our better performances. We played well in the game, had the majority of players available to pick from. And hopefully, first and foremost, that would be the case come March, that we'll have a strong squad to pick from. There won't be any COVID issues, hopefully not too many injuries. And hopefully the world will be in a better place and moving forward in the right direction. I think for a country like Ireland to have the numbers that we've had missing over the last few trips, it doesn't kind of give you the best chance to perform and get results. We're not blessed with, you know, an England squad the way their talent is, or a top country the way, if they had 7 or 8 or 9 pullouts, they can put in world class players time after time in different positions. We're just not blessed like that in a country. So if we're missing 3, 4, 5 players, we struggle, and there's no getting away from that. And that's always been the way for the country. So it's been tough for the squad. It's been tough for Stephen. And like you said, hopefully we can start in a better way come March. Like you said, or as I've said before, with a fitter squad, with players available, and being somewhat to our strongest squad to pick from. And if that's the case, we'll give ourselves the best chance of starting well in March.
Yeah, it's been tough in lots of ways for Stephen Kenny, because there's been, as always with Ireland, the sideshow, which often becomes bigger than the actual show itself. And we've seen the fallout from the video. Alan Kelly has stepped away because of the COVID issues. Damien Duff has stepped away as well. Now, he hasn't spoken about it, but obviously the speculation is that it's to do with that. Firstly, on Damien Duff's departure, what were your thoughts when you heard?
Firstly, disappointment, if I'm being honest with you. Just because, you know, listen, Damien's had an unbelievable career, top class coach, as I've had probably, whatever it was, 4 or 5 trips with him. Really, really refreshing, hugely knowledgeable about the game, brilliant coach on the grass. So disappointment, really, if I'm being honest with you, firstly, because he brought so much to the camp and his knowledge about the game. So yeah, it's sad to see him go, but obviously that was Damien's decision. I'm sure Stephen will have his own ideas moving forward and who he'll bring in. And whoever it is, I'm sure he'll bring his own stamp on the group.
Mm. If it was, and I say it's speculation, I'm sure Damien Duff will talk about it, but there's no getting away from the fact that the fallout from the video ended up being absolutely massive. You were in the room, you were in the squad. Mm. When you started to get word of this, it obviously broke in one of the English papers first. What were you thinking?
I thought it was way too much, if I'm being honest with you. You know, I think obviously the media probably got wind of it, and we were probably on the floor with results confidence, and they tried to stick the knife in a little bit. And I thought it was poor. I thought it was disappointing. Like I said, blew up way too much. And I know obviously people are going to add speculation to the stuff on Damien and the Kells, I suppose, of course, because people put 2 and 2 together. But I think it's not right. I think it's, you know, people are jumping to conclusions, and you know, whether Damien comes out and speaks about it or whatever, you know, whatever he wants to do about it, he may stay quiet. I don't think people should, like I said, jump to too many conclusions because they don't know the true story about it, to be honest with you.
You, at this stage, are one of the more senior members of the squad, particularly around then when so much had been going on COVID-wise. Like, did you get a sense that the video that was played beforehand, that we haven't seen, but it seemed to have a general gist of what was in it, did you get a sense that it was going to be problematic, that there were people who had an issue with it?
No, not whatsoever. The video got played, obviously, as we all know, before the game, and as soon as we left camp, it started blowing up. There wasn't one word of anyone being disappointed with it or angry about it or showing any kind of annoyance towards the video. So, you know, when I went home and left camp, and for it all to be blown up, it was confusing. I didn't understand it. So, like I said, the whole thing from start to finish was strange for me. And like I said, I think it's been blown up way too much. People trying to stick the knife in when times are going tough rather than sticking together. So, I find it a little bit strange, but it is what it is. People try and blow things up and try and rock the boat a little bit. But we have to, you know, kind of come March, forget about all that and just crack on as a team. And like I said, I want to try and achieve something with Ireland, get to a major tournament, and that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, just on the to finish up on that then, the sticking the knife in or sticking together, when Stephen Kenny was at one of his press conferences before Christmas, and it was obviously still a big story, and he was saying it was put out there by somebody who didn't have the best interests of the team at heart, and it's never come out as to how the video came out. And I don't know the inner dynamics of a team setting and what it's like when you're within a group, but is there any concern that you're getting together and that people are looking around wondering, well, who did this?
No, I suppose, listen, since it's come out, we haven't met back up still. So I'd imagine come March, you know, that won't be the feeling. Like you said earlier on, we need to try and forget about that previous few months, because it's been tough for us as a group and as a nation, and, you know, for results and for goals and all the rest of it. So we're going to have to put that to a side and forget about it. I think, like I said, if you're in the camp that time and in the dressing room that time, you know, if you're wise enough, you'll definitely understand that it's been blown out way too much and should be put to bed, because I don't see, you know, it wasn't a major story in my eyes whatsoever. So the whole surprise around this when I left camp and go home and see how much it blew up was a huge surprise to me, because like I said, in camp, nobody's shown any annoyance to it. No one was frustrated or, you know, got in little groups like players do at all levels and talk about the video or whatever. There was absolutely nothing of that. And like you said, me being one of the maybe the senior players in the camp at the minute, I didn't get any wind of that whatsoever. So for me, the whole thing was bizarre and strange, really.
Yeah, it was absolutely bizarre. There's no question about that. You've been very good with your time. As you mentioned, you're a senior player in the squad. Now you're taking your coaching badges. Is this the long-term plan? Have you thought about what comes next? You're probably, what, 5-6 years away from step, but is coaching something you're definitely thinking about?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm at an age now, I suppose, where I need to start thinking about, you know, what I'd like to do when I finish up. And football has been a massive part of my life, and I want to continue with football in my life moving forward after I retire. I suppose, you know, when you get closer to that, to the finishing line, and listen, I'd like to think I've still got a few more years left in me. I worry a little bit about when I finish. So me wanting to go about it in the right way, I want to be organised and
what are you worried about?
I'm worried about finishing, if I'm being honest. I know it's going to come to an end. For me, I love the game. I'm obsessed with playing. I love the fact that I go into training every day and work to my utmost every single day, and try and go out and achieve something on a Saturday then again to try and win a game or put myself to a test mentally, physically, technically, tactically, everything, you know. So I want to put myself in the best position possible when I finish. You know, you hear lads when you know the older pros, I suppose, and the older lads when they finish, they always say, you know, get yourself in a good position for when you finish, get yourself organized and ready to put yourself, you know, in the right frame of mind for when you finish. So that's something that I've been thinking of recently, and getting my badges done and get myself on the road to getting them complete when I finish is something that I want to do.
Well, listen, very best of luck with it, and thanks for taking the time out. I know it's a hectic schedule. I was looking there, even though we're just over a month away from the international games, I think you've got 9 or 10 matches with Swansea between now and then, so you can't really get too carried away just yet.
Yeah, no, there's lots of games to come. We got a five, six-week schedule today, actually, from now until March time, until the international break. And yeah, we've got a lot of games coming up, but it's hugely exciting. It's what I came on loan for, to be involved in games, and like I said, exciting weeks ahead before the international break.
Yeah, keep the goals flowing. Connor, great stuff,
I'll
always
try my best. Top man, cheers.
Thanks for joining us. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
All right, welcome back. It is Thursday's football show. Nathan with you this evening. If you missed Conor Hourihan, some really interesting stuff on his departure from Aston Villa, why he was so desperate to go and get first team football with Swansea, some insight into Jack Grealish's brilliance as well, and also, of course, talking lots about the Republic of Ireland, both on the pitch and the disappointment of Slovakia and his miss in that game, and, of course, what's happened around Ireland off the pitch and the departure of Damien Duff and Videogate and all of that. You'll be able to get all of that on the Football Show podcast very shortly. Right now, though, Vinny Perth is on the line. Good evening, Vinny.
Good evening. How are you, Nathan?
That's a very fancy headset you got yourself there. Doing a bit of gaming, are you? Are you just watching David Myler every morning thinking, I want myself a bit of that?
Yeah, I haven't got the good jerseys in the background, so the lads weren't happy with me sound, so I had to bring out the young lads' PlayStation headphones. So first time,
very impressive. There is football going on at the moment. Chelsea are 1-0 up against Barnsley. Tammy Abraham with the goal. Looks as though they're on their way into the quarterfinals. What have you made of Thomas Tuchel so far?
Yeah, he's been, to be honest, he's been excellent. The way he's come in, and I know there was a lot of talk around Frank Lampard leaving, but he's come in. There's a little bit of Klopp, I think, about him. Obviously, he followed Klopp into Dortmund. And I think his biggest challenge is, when I mention Klopp, I mean that sort of celebrating with people and hugging players and stuff after games. But he's given a lot of people a second chance, people like Alonso and Christensen at centre-half, and even there, Kepa made a brilliant save in the first half. So there seems to be new life into Chelsea, that often the way when a new manager goes in, and it's interesting. I think his biggest challenge will be he's falling out with people, whether it's been at Dortmund or the director of football or Paris Saint-Germain, and Chelsea hierarchy aren't always the easiest to get on with, so that'll be a challenge for him. But tactically, I think he's been brilliant. The 3-4-3 sort of formation, and Hudson-Odoi doing sort of what Moses done a couple of years ago under Conte. So it's been really interesting, and it's early, but been very impressed with him so far.
Yeah, it does feel as though there's some similarities to the Conte era, that he has come in. Maybe this was always his preconceived notion of exactly how he wanted the players to line up, but it looked as though Marcus Alonso was going to be gone in the January transfer window. He hadn't seen side of a pitch, and actually he's looked at him and thought, for the system I want to play, he's perfect. He may not have been anything near what Frank Lampard wanted, and it probably, that's a difficulty in itself, because it means now the players who thought that they were going to have a big role may not have a big role in that system, and they've got a big old squad there.
Yeah, to be honest, it looks like when you see Alonso, you almost forgot about him under Lampard or Christensen. These people, you think, when you see them now, you think, geez, that's part of the problem. The squad is too big, and there's a lot of management needed in that squad. So you look at Reece James, you look the way Hudson-Odoi has taken sort of that wing-back role. So it is a difficult, it will be difficult for him. He'll get away with the first few weeks. New players will give them time before they fall out with them, and the FA Cup obviously helps in terms of getting players game time, but it is a challenge. It looks like Chelsea's squad is probably too big. Look at someone like Billy Gilmore, and to be fair to Lampard, he brought a lot of these young players in, gave them a chance, and Billy Gilmore, just, I know he's done well so far tonight, but a lot of players like that are just on the periphery and haven't really had their chance. So it's a real opportunity. I think it's been very exciting. The shape and the system is really good. I think it suit Mason Mount, even though he left him out of his first game, sort of. That's
well, that sort of sums up the reactionary nonsense that he's facing, and even Billy Gilmore, who's still a kid, and it seemed as though he was going out on loan, and that then when Tuchel saw him, he realized, well, I'm going to give him some game time, I want to keep him around. That how long do you think it takes, and I'm sure maybe every manager is different, how long do you think it would take Tuchel at training to decide on who he likes and who he doesn't? He'll have seen these players, he'll have done his research and all that, but do things change dramatically, do you think, when he actually gets on the training ground with them?
Yeah, I think it's a fresh set of eyes on a player. So again, you just look at Kepa. I mean, there's no way he's a bad goalkeeper. Hasn't gone well for him at Chelsea, but they spent a lot of money for him, and he is a good goalkeeper. Again, as I said, he made a great save early in the game, and some people just get a new lease of life. Managers is a fresh set of eyes, and it's football, it's opinions, everyone has a different opinion, and it's just the way it goes, and obviously the results have been positive, so once they're positive, well then that helps, makes life a lot easier, and so it's a positive start for him. I think the thing with Billy Gilmore is it's a bit like Phil Foden. I think people, especially in the world we live in now with social media, and everything is reactive, and it's like he needs to get games. You don't need to get games too early. You look at Phil Foden, is a perfect example for someone like Billy Gilmore. Are you better being at Man City watching David Silva, De Bruyne, all of these people every single day and learning from them, and then when your chance comes, you're ready? Or, no disrespect to League One clubs or even Championship clubs, are you better being there? I would say you can be at a club too long, but it's still very early for Billy Gilmore, and I think it'd be good to be around, you know, some of the players they have there are really top end, you know, Mount,
Kante,
the whole lot. That midfield is, you know, there's a lot of good players there, and he'll do well. Jorginho, he'll do well by staying there and learning from the best, you know.
Yeah, it is an interesting point, because for most players, the feeling is actually the best thing to do when you get to 19, 20, and Billy Gilmore still has a bit to go to even get to that, yeah. That the best thing to do is go and play football, to be playing men's football. But actually, if Phil Foden, who is making it, and Billy Gilmore is almost certain to make it, there's no great benefit to playing in the Championship, because it's not going to be like anything. Like, Phil Foden couldn't experience anything in the Championship like he's going to experience at Manchester City training and playing in that Manchester City team.
No, and the problem is, it's a fine line. There's nothing wrong with, if Billy Gilmore doesn't play for the next 6 months, well then, you know, 10, 15 games in the Championship would definitely help him. But he's going to be on the periphery, a bit like Phil Foden was. He'll come on, he'll train with the very best players, and he'll learn how to do things the right way. So it's a fine balance between, that's what I said, you can be too long at a club, and 23 football is just lacks intensity. So you have to be careful that you don't stay too long. But as I said, when you've got some of the best players in the world in your club, and there's no doubt Chelsea and Man City have, you're better being there for as long as possible. And as I said, learning from these people, because if Foden is able to get into the team against ahead of some of the players there at the moment, he must be doing something right. And the same will be the case for Billy Gilmore. So, it's a difficult one. And the other thing is, especially because them two players in particular are so slight, is there's no guarantee they do well in the Championship. Mm. It's such a different league, and it's so competitive and high intensity. And the standard of the Championship's gone up what it used to be. It's not about, you know, kick your way out of the Championship. It's far from it. But at the same time, it is a lot more physical, and there's a game every 3 or 4 days as well. So it probably suits both of them players to be where they are, I think.
Yeah, Chelsea still 1-0 up 9 minutes to go against Barnsley. The draw, by the way, has been made for the quarterfinals already. Chelsea, if they win that game, will play Sheffield United. Leicester City will play Manchester United. It's Bournemouth against Southampton and Everton against Manchester City. So a couple of very tasty games in there. And don't forget, we've got two live games coming up in the Premier League on Sunday. Myself and former Leeds United player Steve McPhail are going to be covering Leeds against Arsenal. And Brian Kerr will bring you West Brom against Manchester United from 2 alongside Stephen Doyle. We were listening to Conor Hourihan there, who's absolutely flying at Swansea. 3 goals in 3 games. Looks rejuvenated, looks happy, looks in this free role to be absolutely thriving. And it's good to see, it's welcome to see an Irish player playing and looking like he's enjoying his football, because we're not that far away. We're only just about 6 weeks away, if even that, from the first of the World Cup qualifiers. If you were picking a team right now, if you were picking an Ireland 11 right now, and Ireland had a game this weekend, what would your Ireland 11 be?
Well, first of all, I thought Conor was very, very good. Very impressed with him. And he hasn't done loads of interviews over the years, and I think you can tell he's on a mission, and I think he'll be a success when he does go into coaching. But the way he made that decision to go to Swansea, you can tell it's detailed, it's well thought out, and not everyone would have made that decision. So that was a very impressive interview from Conor. But for me, I think Ireland are stuck between the 4-3-3 system, and I think there has to be a huge argument for, do we look at 3-5-2? Because of the players we have, there's probably, at the moment, there's probably only two, in my mind, two key decisions to be made. And I think in goal, I think I put Kevin Kelleher in goal.
Right.
I think if Klopp is willing, albeit it's injuries to Alisson, but if Klopp is willing to show faith in him in the Premiership, Champion League games, then it's not something where, you know, you'd have a fear of a young goalkeeper going in and being overawed by the occasion. What he has proved when he has had his chances, he isn't fazed. He isn't fazed by the big night, whether it was the Champions League back end of last year or the Premiership games he's had to go in for. So he looks like he's well capable. His temperament is ready for it. And then his passing style, he does play almost like Alisson's. Probably a bad example after Alisson's two mistakes the other day. But he plays that way.
That's Stephen Kenny, we presume, wants to play.
Wants to play. And I think for that reason, I think for me, it would be different if Randolph was playing, but he's not. I think that's a decision now that it sort of needs to be made. I think the other one is the obvious one is Duffy. But I still think if you're going to play a back four, Duffy plays. And he plays a centre half. I know it's a big call, but I just think it is one area we will be blessed in time. Like Dara O'Shea has...
Is Dara O'Shea not ready? He's played a full season in the Premier League. Kieran Clarke is playing fairly regularly in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, I'd say he is. It's one of them. It's a tough call for any manager to make. I don't think Duffy has let Ireland down anyway. I know the last sort of couple of games, he was going through a loss of form, and he still hasn't found that form at Celtic, to be fair. But I just think he's the leader. He's probably someone that the manager will look to and see leadership qualities in and around the squad and the dressing room.
Yeah. We're tied on time, Vinny, so I'm going to have to push you for your 11.
Right.
Run through it.
So I think I'd go Kelleher. I'd play Coleman, Egan, Duffy and Stevens. My midfield would have to be, of the two, Hourihan, Hendrick. I would play Alan Brown in the 10. I think we've got to play Doherty ahead of Coleman. I know we tried it and people said it didn't work, but it was on a windy an airport somewhere. And Conley and Robinson up front. And whoever play, like Conley can play in that left position with Robinson
no
up front.
No Malumbi, no Nice. Where's the new generation?
I think to be fair, Malumbi's playing. He's playing every week. But I think Hura and Hendrick and Alan Brown at the moment is our best midfield three. I think Malumbi will force himself into that over the season, but it is a tough call. And as I said, Conley and Robinson can alternate up front. Hourihan can do exactly what he did. If Conley plays off the left, what he did for when Jack Grealish played there, he can cover that sort of left-hand side. Gives us huge energy, and he's probably one of our best passers. And I think it's a big, big year for Alan Brown for Ireland. I think he's the one that can kick on.
So there you have it. That is 6 weeks out, and we've got 6 weeks to discuss this, and hopefully all of these players are available by the time they get together to go to Serbia. But what Vinny's saying, Caoimhín Kelleher maybe getting the nod in goal, which will be a big decision that Stephen Kenny will have to make. A back four, Coleman, Duffy, Egan, Stevens. You'd have Hourihan, Hendrick and Brown as the midfield three. Doherty and Conley either side, and maybe Robinson down through the middle.
Yeah, and we've seen Robinson doing that in the Premiership, as you said. So the other option is a five-man and back line, but that means I don't think Duffy can play that. So I think he's only he's a back four-man, in my opinion. So that may mean O'Shea coming in, but beyond
Vinny,
that, personnel won't change.
Get back to playing Fortnite, Vinny. Get back to playing Fortnite. They're calling for you there.
Apex Legends is the new one for me.
All right, Vinny. Great stuff as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Chat to you soon. Thanks a lot.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.